I know a lot of people who are going through some transitions in their lives. As a matter of fact, everybody I know is going through some transitions. And I wanted to talk about that because some of these passages that we go through can be pretty difficult. And sometimes it feels like we lose our practice when they hit us. And in fact, this is the perfect time, both for our practice and for the transition to bring them together. Both will be enriched. So, the title of my talk is Lessons from Life's Transitions. One of the three characteristics of all of our experience is change. It's like we live in this wind tunnel of change. Sometimes things are moving through in a light, gentle, refreshing breeze. And at other times, it's just a ferocious squall of things getting changed completely beyond our control. Whatever the pace of the change that we're experiencing at any given time, even when we're kind of bored, if things are moving pretty slowly, even staying the same or seeming to, there's always change going on, even if we don't notice it. And so I have an announcement to make. Thomas Davis, who has helped us out over the past year by teaching when Deb and I can't, is going to be moving to Los Angeles. He's been asked to join Los Angeles Insight as a facilitator in training and to head their outreach to people of color. So I'm very happy for him and for the people I know at LA Insight, some of whom are my classmates from my teacher training. But just think of the transition that Thomas will be facing. He's losing his home at Spirit Rock, where he's been working, and he's losing all of his friends and associates here in the Bay Area. I mean, I'm sure the relationship will still be there, but seeing them on a regular basis is going to be lost. So it's tempting to wonder if it will be better or worse than his current situation. All we can know is that it will be different in many ways that feel big. So if there are things about the new situation that are displeasing, that could make him unhappy. And the hope that is motivating him to make this change could end up making him happy. But we don't know. We can't know, and neither can Thomas. He's stepping out into the unknown of anicca, the ever-changing, inconstant aspect of life, with the unrelenting possibility of dukkha, of suffering. Dukkha is one of the other three characteristics, and the third is the lack of an enduring separate self for anything, any object, any other live being, and for ourselves. But you know, in a way, Thomas, as are we all, is already in that state of the great unknown. No matter what we're doing or what's happening, that's where we live. In fact, Stephen Batchelor wrote a book about this uncertainty of life called Living with the Devil, because it gives rise to Mara, or delusion, which always lives with us until we are able to uproot every source of suffering in us. We face this uncertainty, this possibility of suffering every day. That's life. That's your life. You simply must deal with it. There's a Buddhist joke that says, your life is a task so difficult it has never been attempted before. The author is unknown. We really notice this wind of change when we're hit with a big change, with all of our emotional reactions to what we've lost or gained. We probably don't notice so much when it's a little change, when the wind is blowing gently. Tonight I want to talk about how we deal with anicca in all shapes and sizes, because we can. That's kind of the gist of Buddhist teaching. The Eightfold Path will fit changes, impermanence, in all of its manifestations. But the most effective size of change for us to deal with is tiny. We do the little things first. So in dealing with impermanence, we can practice by just seeing the rise and fall of the breath, and then the rising and the passing away of thought while we're sitting and meditating. We have that opportunity to look at these tiny little changes. The thought comes up, we notice it, very often it just falls apart and passes away. And if we practice doing this, then when something really big hits, we will have more faith and courage to help us deal with that. Regardless of the size of the change, there's always the possibility of dukkha that accompanies it. Even change that brings pleasure, like that shiny new car or a fascinating new friend. The fender's going to get hit, and you're going to notice that new friend's irritating habits. Everything we get can be lost. Loss is just the caboose of gain, and it always comes to pass, if only through our own death. So how do we deal with the transitions in our lives? The meditation. We sit and we meditate. And while we're doing it, we really watch what happens. A thought arises and it frightens you. Then it passes. See the thought. Feel the emotional response. Investigate over and over. And hold all of this in an open heart, in a completely unguarded awareness that transcends judgment of good or bad, pleasant or distressful. Just notice. Just pay attention. Do the same with thoughts of pleasure They too arise and pass away, and they leave that aftertaste of loss, however subtle. Watch for it. Experience it. When you do this, you are seeing clearly the truth of the present moment. And that's how we learn to deal with change and with dukkha. We practice opening our minds and our hearts to this terrifying uncertainty of life, that we never know what sukha, happiness, or dukkha the next moment is going to bring us. Unless we meditate this way and develop the capacity to transcend, to not cling, to not reach after pleasure or push away aversion. Now, as I say this, it probably feels like a pretty daunting challenge. But remember, we're talking about starting out this practice with thoughts that arise and pass away while you're sitting safely meditating, where you're not going to get hurt except by this internal emotional response to the thoughts. And this practice also includes joyous possibilities. When I first realized that this talk might offer the occasion to read a poem that I dearly love, I had to stay open to maybe not. I didn't really know how it was going to develop. But here it is. It's perfectly appropriate. So I'm going to try to savor this joy and freely let it pass in its own time. The Guest House by Rumi. This being human is a guest house. Every moment a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still treat each guest honorably. He may be cleaning you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice. Meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. The Buddha realized on the night of his enlightenment that the impermanence of our experience is only a problem for us if we cling. If we resist the changes that come to us. If we make ourselves into a wind tunnel that turns the unadorned truth of the moment into feelings of good or bad. Take away our feeling that we have to have X, Y, or Z, and there is no dukkha. Let go of resistance to things that may bother us, and nothing will bother us. This does amount to stepping out into the unknown, abandoning the illusion that we have any shield or power to defeat what might make us unhappy. Ultimately, it means opening our heart so wide that the outline of our image of ourselves dissolves. And that's a tall order. We can do this, though, with the same technique we use in meditation. It can be said that it's not so much what we do sitting there as how we do it. The Satipatthana Sutta instructs us to develop mindfulness while being ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. So I'll try to paraphrase that a little more simply, a little more. To observe the rising and the falling of our thoughts and our feelings with open and discerning attention, unrestricted by wanting or aversion. Completely open awareness, completely open heart. By taking this approach to the kaleidoscope of mental phenomena that naturally occur when we meditate, we strengthen our capacity to do this with life's transitions. We develop our ability to transcend, to be fully present without clinging. There is no secret path that advanced students are initiated into in the back room of retreats. It's the same map for everyone in every situation. We use that same unguarded awareness in meditation. We face life with a heart so open that all experience can pass through, and we achieve nibbana when all clinging is gone. This is easiest to practice in meditation, so the advice is always practice every day. Like a musician or an athlete, develop that skill and maintain it. What we think of as real life seems to lie between the small changes and the ultimate transformation of nibbana. Most of us want our practice to help us with the big changes in life, and it can. We will get an extra boost in dealing with the small and moderate changes in life when we recognize that greeting any of life's transitions with an open mind and heart does help lead to nirvana. So whether or not you think you're going to, whether or not you think you can, you're on your way. There is no failing at dealing with change. There's just doing the best we can. When you think about it, what choice do we have? Would we choose to do this poorly? Do we choose to meditate poorly? No, we just sit there for the time that we've allotted and do the best we can. Every time we meditate, that's what we do. It may be that at the moment, it doesn't feel like we're doing very well, but it is the best we can at that moment. It helps to remember when we're facing those changes, if we can remember to investigate what's going on in them the same way we investigate what happens when we meditate. Just keep that unguarded awareness, that open heart, the evolving understanding that we have from moment to moment, the best we can. Investigate how it feels to gain or lose something or someone. Why did it feel that way? Can we inquire into these things without judgment about ourselves or anything else? Without telling the story over and over about how this happened, without seeking any blame. Well, maybe we can't. We're just doing the best we can. But we can investigate what happens when we do that and imagine the possibility of opening the heart just a little bigger. This constant flow of changes that happens to us in our lives offers us endless opportunities to let go, to practice letting go of whatever stories are plaguing us so that we can be fully with it, whatever is going on. These are all learning opportunities, all the visitors that come to your guest house, and they can be easier to go through when we face them that way. In his article All About Change, Tenisiro Bhikkhu said it's easier to learn these lessons from life's transitions if also in our daily life we practice opening our hearts through generosity, kindness, and concentration. But he adds, if you'd rather aim for a happiness going beyond change, and by that he means nirvana, these same activities can still help you by fostering the clarity of mind needed for awakening. The more we can regard the transitions in our lives as lessons for our practice, the more we move toward liberation. Thank you.